our first True Crime Date Night. I'm Casey, and I am joined tonight by my wife, Nikki.
Hi, everyone.
What do you have for us tonight?
So tonight we're going to be talking about Maura Murray. Have you heard of this one?
No, I can't say that I have.
That's awesome. This is a huge case with tons of facts, a ridiculous amount of opinions, and more rabbit holes than any one human I think could possibly examine thoroughly.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess you're just shoving me into the deep end.
Sort of. So we're just going to go through like a quick synopsis of the overall case, and then we'll talk about a couple things that are notable about the case. So we're not going to get into absolutely everything, but it would be nice to get through the main part and then have a talk about it.
Sounds great. I'm down.
All right, let's get started.
Let's do it.
Maura Murray was born on May 4th, 1984, to an Irish Catholic family in a working-class area in Massachusetts, just south of Boston. She's the fourth out of five children. She graduated high school as an honor student, and she was well-known as a star athlete, excelling in track. She had a big, bright future ahead of her, and when it came time, she had her pick of colleges. She chose West Point.
Oh, wow, West Point. That's interesting.
Exactly.
Did she have any desire to be in the military, do you know of?
You know, I actually couldn't find anything about that, so I'm not sure if she really was interested in joining the military or if she just wanted to find the most challenging thing she could, which people who knew her said, that's right on track.
That makes sense.
She attended West Point for chemical engineering, and she was there for about three semesters before transferring to the University of Massachusetts Amherst, and there she studied nursing.
Oh, wow. So she went from chemical engineering to nursing.
Exactly. But don't get too freaked out because actually, from what I've read, this nursing program at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, UMass, is actually really, really difficult.
Okay. So it was going or continuing the challenge kind of thing she was looking for.
Yeah. It's still one of the more challenging programs you can get into for nursing.
Okay. Makes sense. Sure.
February 9th, 2004, Maura was driving on Route 112 in Haverhill, New Hampshire. There, she crashes her car. The area is quiet, but it's well-traveled. It's a small stretch of road, but there's four houses on this little bend. Three out of the four of them hear the crash or they notice it, and they're all watching out their windows. Some of them start to call it in, and the first call goes in at 7:27 p.m.,
Oh, wow. So that was pretty early in the night still.
It was, but I mean, it's still winter, so it's dark outside.
Right.
Yeah, but it's not crazy late. And like I said, people noticed. So a few minutes later, about 7:30, a local bus driver stops. He sees her. He talks to her. He said she seems fine. She tells him she doesn't need anything and that she's already called AAA. Another neighbor calls the accident in at 7:40. She reports the same accident that the cops have already received numerous reports about.
Okay.
By 7:46, the first responding officer is on scene. He finds a car that's locked. It's got some damage, but it's nothing alarming. His report says that it was headed east when it went a little off the road and it struck some trees, spun around, and now it's facing the opposite direction. He observed a box of wine in the passenger seat, red liquid on the driver's side door, and on the roof of the car.
Okay, so couldn't the wine box just have, like, exploded or got, like, damaged in the crash?
Could it have been damaged? Absolutely. It doesn't say that the box was damaged. It says it was just there. So okay. I imagine if it had exploded, he would have notated that.
Sure. One would hope, I guess.
So as they're preparing to tow the vehicle, they have to open the door, obviously. The officer notices a soda bottle. He said it smelled strongly of alcohol. At 7:56, an ambulance shows up to assist at the scene, but the driver's not there. Officers do a cursory search for the female driver that had been reported. Along with them are the EMTs and a couple neighbors. Even the bus driver drives up and down. They don't find her anywhere.
Okay, so she just disappears from this point. Between talking to the bus driver and now gone.
Exactly. Technically, if you're looking at the times, what we're talking about here is an accident that occurs at 7:27. People start calling it in. Everyone notices immediately. A bus driver talks to her at 7:30. The last call goes into the police at 7:40. And then by 7:46, she's gone. No one knows where she went. No one heard or saw another car pull up. She's just not there anymore.
Wow.
36 hours after the accident occurred, New Hampshire Fish and Game gets the call, and they come in to help. They search on foot. They search with dogs. They even search with a helicopter with FLIR to search for heat signatures.
Right, right. Okay. And nothing, I presume.
They find nothing. Not a single trace. They don't find footprints, no heat signatures, no articles of clothing, nothing she left behind. It's literally like she vanished.
Hmm. Okay.
At this point, there's cops, the Fish and Game, her family, some friends, volunteers, and locals. They search the area. She was well known to this area in that it's a place that she had been before. So they search areas near it that they know she liked to visit. They don't find anything. They pull surveillance videos from the town she had to drive through to get here. Those don't show her either.
So completely vanished.
On top of all of that, no one can seem to figure out why she was driving up here in the first place.
Oh, okay.
She didn't tell anyone she was leaving. She didn't tell anyone where she was going. No one even really knew exactly how long she would be gone for.
So not like a friend or a boyfriend she was going to go visit, just...
Not that they found.
Okay. Interesting.
At this time, they start looking into her life before this incident. And what they're finding doesn't make any sense at all. And the first sign of trouble they're seeing while she was still enrolled at West Point.
Wait, all that time before?
Yeah.
Okay.
So she actually stole something from Fort Knox.
Wait. Fort Knox.
Again, it sounds crazier Kentucky. Than it really is. So they're at West Point and they take like a field trip or a day trip.
Yeah, no, it's more than likely if it was West Point, it was like cadet summer training or something like that.
Exactly. So there's this little gift shop. She goes in with a friend. They mosey around. And as they leave, Maura gets stopped. They check her bag and she has shoplifted something silly. The girl she was with can't really remember exactly what it was, but...
Your pet little shoplifting crime.
Yeah, it was like nail polish or a lip gloss. Something foolish. Anyway, so that's the first blemish on her record. Some people think that it might be the reason she left West Point in the first place. There's a very strict honor code.
Yeah.
Exactly. So the next thing that they find is 3 months before her actual disappearance. She had been caught using a stolen credit card to have food delivered to her dorm.
Oh, wow. Okay. Whose credit card was it?
Okay, so that's in dispute. We don't obviously know exactly whose credit card it was, but...
Okay.
The thing is, there had been lots of charges to this credit card, so they don't think it was just her. It just happened to be her this time. So it was probably a number that had been floating around the dorms.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense. Of course. Okay, fair. Like, oh, I'm going to innocently just get some pizza, and then boom, she got stuck with it.
So again, it sounds horrendous, but it's... I really just kind of chalk it up to college kids being college kids.
I mean,
a stolen credit card sounds terrible, but when you're thinking about it, like if you're in college, someone's like, hey, just use this number.
Yeah, no, there wasn't malicious intent.
Exactly.
Premeditated. Like she's like, it's like, I'm going to go out and steal this credit card and like,
exactly.
Blah, blah, blah. And yeah. Okay. Sure.
So yeah, she gets busted for that. She goes to court and the judge gives her a slap on the wrist. He says, look, you seem like a decent person. So keep your nose clean for 3 months and this doesn't have to go on your record.
Okay, sure.
All right, so that takes us to February 5th. That's a couple days before she goes missing.
Right.
She takes a phone call from one of her sisters while she's at work, and her sister's telling her that she's having life problems and issues with her fiancé, and apparently this call gets Maura really upset. After the call, she's...
So she had a fiancé.
Maura was dating someone. Her sister had a fiancé.
Okay, all right, following now. Okay, this sister made the call, hey, I'm having some life issues... And she's helping her sister out.
Essentially, they're talking about it.
Okay.
But the call leaves Maura super upset. She's literally distraught, is what her coworkers are saying.
Okay.
She's crying. And it gets to the point where her coworkers call her supervisor. Her supervisor comes in and says that Amora is unresponsive. They eventually just take her back to her dorm. And the whole time, the supervisor says, Amora just keeps saying, my sister, my sister.
Okay, weird.
2 days before she goes missing, her dad comes to visit her at UMass. They look for a car around town because Amora's is in bad shape, but they don't find anything within their budget. They go to lunch where they run into a friend of hers from college. They visit for a while, and after lunch, Amora takes her dad back to the hotel. She takes his car and goes back to campus. That night, she attends a dorm party. She leaves that party about 2:30 in the morning, and she takes the car and starts driving back to her dad's hotel. On her way, she goes off the road, hits a guardrail, and does about $9,000 or $10,000 worth of damage to her dad's vehicle.
So I assume that she was drunk while driving.
Well, that's where you'd be wrong. Or at least it wasn't notated. The officer on scene that night wrote absolutely nothing about suspicions that she was intoxicated, didn't even mention a road sobriety test. So if she was drunk, she talked her way out of it.
Okay, fair. Which is possible.
It's possible, but these are cops. I assume they would notate it. She's taken back to her dad's hotel. She tells him what happened. He's obviously not happy about it. They call the insurance once they're open, and they find out the insurance is going to pay for it. So it's not that big of a deal. That afternoon, her dad drives her back to campus, and he heads home to Connecticut. He calls her later that day to make sure she remembers to pick up the accident forms that they're going to need to fill out for the insurance. And they say that once she has them, they'll call each other and they'll fill them out over the phone. So all in all, it's not a huge deal.
Sure, makes sense.
That takes us to Monday the 9th. Amora uses her personal computer to look up directions to the Berkshires. She's looking up a way to get to Burlington, Vermont.
Okay, sure. I mean, that's a fairly normal vacation destination, so...
Exactly. Nothing crazy.
Right. Okay.
She emails her boyfriend, which is a response to an email that he sent her. Nothing wild. Then she calls a condo rental service that her family has used previously.
Okay. So as I mentioned earlier, though, she wasn't going to meet the boyfriend. This email was just like, hey, sup, how's it going kind of email.
Exactly. At this point, her boyfriend is actually located at Fort Sill.
Oh, okay. So he is... currently, or I was seeing at that point, probably commissioned.
Probably. I'm not entirely sure. I didn't find perfect record of it.
Sure.
He's just in Fort Sill. We know that. So he's just shy of 2,000 miles away right now.
Right.
So she calls this condo rental service. Like I said, she was familiar with it, but the owner decides not to rent her out a condo. Nothing else is mentioned. She calls a classmate about wanting to return some clothing that she had borrowed. Then around 1:24 p.m., she emails her nursing course supervisor. She explains that there's been a death in the family and that she's going to be out of town for about a week.
Oh, wow. So a death in the family. I don't remember that.
That's because there wasn't one.
Interesting. Okay, so no death in the family at all.
There was no death in the family. It looks like it was just an excuse to get away for a week.
Interesting. Okay, very well.
Yeah, but wait, there's more.
Okay.
205. She calls a number that is a previous recording about booking hotels in Stowe, Vermont. 218. She calls her boyfriend. She leaves him a message saying that she's going to call him back later. That whole message takes about a minute. 3:30, she drives off campus in her black Saturn. Yes, that's the one that we all know has issues, the one her dad was trying to help her replace. 3:40, she pulls $280 from an ATM. It pretty much empties her entire bank account. She goes to a liquor store, and at 4:37, she checks her voicemail. It's the last time her phone is used.
Okay, so at the liquor store, wine is presumed?
Wine is absolutely on the list of things that she purchased.
Okay.
She buys about $40 worth of alcohol. The box of wine that they found in her car, a bottle of Kahlua, a bottle of Bailey's, a bottle of vodka. Nothing wild.
Yeah, those are pretty tame, if you ask me.
So in the car at the crash site, they mention the boxed wine. They mention a soda bottle that smelled like alcohol. They didn't mention the other alcohol. The only other things they find in her car that they really notate is a couple changes of clothes, her school textbooks, they mentioned birth control, and some sleeping pills.
What kind of sleeping pills?
You know, actually, I don't think they really mentioned a brand. It's something over the counter. It's something.
Okay, she had that's what I was wondering. So it's not a prescription. She didn't see a doctor for sleep issues. She just got some.
Yeah, something that was over the counter. She just had a couple boxes.
Right, okay.
And that leaves us to all the theories of what might have happened.
Oh, so this is unsolved.
This is a missing persons. This happened in February of 2004, so we're coming up on 17 years.
Wow. Okay. I was not expecting that. Yeah, I really don't know. So you said it was a well-taken area or a well...
well-traveled area.
Right, but it's still wooded. Like,
yeah,
this
absolutely.
Wasn't
yeah, there's okay. like forest all around. It's like a winding forest road.
Right, right. So... she could have, hey, I'm going to wander this way or something. Not saying it's likely, but possible. I know they did the search with the dogs and the fleur and all that, but that only goes so far, especially if you're looking one direction and she went the other direction. You know what I'm saying?
I understand. So when they did the first search, the cops came up from one side of the road. They had the bus driver take the other side of the road. So that is now both ways you would travel if you were traveling by the road.
Right.
So the searches after that were traveling down like back roads. They were checking in the woods thinking, okay, there's alcohol in here. So maybe she was drunk and she wanted to avoid the cops.
Yeah, exactly.
They absolutely were checking the woods. And like I said, 36 hours later, her family was up there. They were searching. All of them are avid hikers, people who are known for like running track. Her dad ran track, which is probably why she did. So all of them are familiar with this area because it's where they vacation. And they're searching everywhere. And it's so unusual to have someone wander off into the woods and you can't find a trail.
Right, right. Well, especially because she's from the area. So just wandering off in the woods in the middle of winter is probably not the best idea. And I would hope she would know that.
Exactly. She's definitely smart enough to know that. So if she did wander off into the woods, she did it without leaving any noticeable footprints, without leaving anything behind, and without leaving a scent trail.
Right, right. So, but there was a change of clothes.
She had a couple of changes of clothes in her vehicle.
So perhaps, okay. So obviously her clothes would smell like her clothes, but maybe an intentional, like trying to disappear kind of thing?
That's possible. But again, she pulled $280 out of her bank account.
Well, right. She emptied her bank account, which makes me think she knew something, you know?
All right, that's fair. As a 21-year-old individual, you have $240, a little bit of alcohol on you. How do you disappear for 17 years? How do you never use your bank account again, your social security number, any of that?
I mean, yes, fair. Understand. So unlikely, like more than likely, unfortunately, she is somewhere to be found. Not alive.
Most likely, yeah, that's the case. One of the rabbit holes we can go down is that there are plenty of people who think she wandered off to commit suicide because of all the stress that had been going on in her life.
Okay, yeah, I can see that.
And that's fair. I could understand that given the circumstances, but how do you kill yourself and hide your body for 17 years?
Oh, it depends on how far you hike, I guess.
All right, that's fair. So another rabbit hole would be that she was driving in tandem with another person who pulled up quick enough while all the neighbors weren't looking and just drove her off somewhere.
No, I really don't like that one at all. That just doesn't make sense to me. That's like, who wouldn't notice another vehicle, one, following her, two, rolling up and her getting in the vehicle right after the crash? That just does not make sense to me.
It doesn't make sense to me either, especially when you consider that if she was driving in tandem with someone, that means someone that she knew. And no one within her immediate orbit was missing during this time, so...
Right, yeah, exactly.
All right, so the next one I wanted to talk about was the possibility that this road was on the way to a well-known ski resort, which is why I say it was well-traveled.
Right, right.
The idea is that possibly a couple people who worked at this ski resort drove by, saw her, picked her up, and either did something nefarious or took her over to the Canadian border.
Okay. I can definitely see the nefarious thing. So, I mean, this is a time, well, I mean, any time, that's not get twisted on the time or anything like that. But this is like both the time, location, it's a perfect place for someone trying to do something like that to, one, operate, and two, have targets.
So are you saying that this is something that you are more favorable towards or against?
No, I'm definitely favorable towards that. She was, you know, she was a victim of like a targeted crime. Maybe not targeted in the fact that they were going after her specifically, after young women.
So like a crime of opportunity.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Kind of like you were telling me a while back, there's like that like road in Canada where like people just die all the time. Like maybe something like that.
Wow. Okay. I mean, sure, it's possible.
I'm just throwing things out there. Like,
that's the thing about this case. There's so many theories and almost anything could have happened. And there are strong believers for each and every one of these rabbit holes that can be pursued.
I mean, that's fair.
Unfortunately, it is fair. Nothing has been found even now. It has been almost 17 years. In fact, I believe April of 2019, they took cadaver dogs out to a house nearby the crash site. And two different dogs with two different handlers both rested on the same location in the basement of a house. They eventually searched that house. They dug up the concrete. Unfortunately, there was nothing there.
You know, that could definitely be something. And, you know, you're saying two different handlers of two different dogs are going on this same point. Like, that's certainly interesting.
It's interesting. It's disappointing that they didn't really find anything, or it's great that they didn't find anything. There's lots of people that want to hold out hope that she's out there somewhere.
Right, just living it up in Canada.
I guess. I don't know how she would go all of these years and not use her social security, her name, touch her bank account, which, by the way, her dad put $4,000 in when she went missing, thinking maybe she left on purpose and she was going to need money. But it's never been touched.
Interesting. That was a smart move on him, though.
Exactly.
Maybe too smart.
So you think her dad might have had something to do with it? Because
no,
that's another theory.
Is it? Okay. So, it I mean, he was one of the last people to see her alive. And she did wreck his car pretty bad. Not saying he did it. And you know, here, like, if anyone is part of the family listening to this, like, I'm not saying anything. I'm just, like, who knows? Like, I don't know. This is really interesting. But I would say the biggest thing right now is I just feel for the family. Like, geez, that really sucks.
Exactly. I can't imagine what it's like to see your daughter and then a day and a half later, she's completely dropped off the face of the earth. It is so heartbreaking.
Yeah, that's terrible.
Exactly. So the family is still looking for anything that can tell them what happened to Maura or where she is now. Pretty much all of the family is just really wanting to put her to rest, have a place to go and visit her. And they just want answers.
Yeah, certainly. And they deserve nothing less. So I would say if you're listening and you happen to know anything, definitely get with the proper authorities. But wow, this was a mind-blowing case, especially for the first episode. Thank you for letting me know. There's a lot of things out there that I wasn't even aware of that happen every day, I guess, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's the sad thing about the true crime genre is that there's always new material.
Wow. Yeah, that's something to think about. And with that, thank you for listening to our first episode. Very much appreciated. As always, please continue to support us. We will be releasing new content every Saturday, bi-weekly. So the first and third Saturdays of each month will be our new content creation days. You can find us on Spotify and Google Podcasts for now. We are branching out with every new episode. So we look forward to your continued support.
That being said, please remember, the Maura Murray case is huge. There is a massive amount of content for it. All kinds of things from TV shows. You can find stuff through Hulu, through YouTube, different podcasters. There's a couple podcasts who have turned this into seasons of episodes. You guys, seasons. Numerous episodes about this case. So ours was just a quick overlook and some quick talk about it. But if you're interested, honestly, type it into your search engine, type it into your podcasts, and you can just go drown in it.
There you go. Well, thank you so much for listening, and everyone have a wonderful night.
Good night, everyone.